Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to The Analyst Inside Cricket, and I'm sorry if I sound a little bit gloomy, but, well, that went well, didn't it, that day? I mean, what an absolute nightmare for England, glory for Australia, and just a shameful batting performance by England. They had the game potentially within their grasp this morning with that beautiful day, and Australia bowled out for 179, and that batting performance was probably one of the limpest I've ever seen. Would you agree with that?
Well, there have been a few, Yoz, in the last few years. They were bowled out by New Zealand, they were bowled out by the West Indies, they were bowled out by Ireland for 85 not so long ago. Perhaps we shouldn't be surprised, but I think the point was, is there was so much expectation today. Stuart Broad said before today's play, you know, this is the biggest day of the Ashes so far, and England failed the test. They absolutely flunked it. They didn't even get an E in A-level terms. That, you know, they failed, and the Ashes have gone just about, and unless there's a miracle. And we've had miracles at Headingley before, but it just seems inconceivable that England would chase 300-plus, it might even be 350-plus by the end of it, to win this test match. It looks done. Australia 2-0 up with two to play, Ashes retained. That's how it looks tonight at Headingley, and I'm sure most England supporters would accept that as well.
Did you know that I got an F for French in my A-level, by the way? I mean, I know this is a long time ago, but I actually changed it to an E. I don't know if people know that. It's a slightly sort of tricky thing to admit.
How do you do that?
Well, you see, on the old certificates for A-levels, they were just written in. They weren't printouts or anything. I know we're talking ancient history here. Didn't even have computers in those days. I think that's almost true, actually. But so I just added a little final stroke onto the bottom of my F and made it into an E. It didn't affect anything. I already got into Durham University anyway, just purely on my cricket. But, so not all hope is totally lost of England getting not even an E today. They could.
Well, you've got to gerrymander the test match to somehow get an England victory. I mean,
we could get that. Who's that bloke who tore up the pitch? George Elliott, wasn't it?
George Davis. George Davis yeah. Back in the 1970s, yeah.
We could get him again. Is he still alive? Get him to dig up the pitch, maybe. Ruin the game. Finish it as a draw, and then England's still got a chance. But, I mean, you know, really seriously, it's so disappointing. Actually, one thing I would say is that a lot of people have said after this day's play that all the sort of aces fell in England's favour. They won the toss in overcast conditions with the lights on and terrible day for batting. And then they had a lovely day for batting today and they squandered each opportunity. Well, they certainly squandered today anyway. But actually, I would just slightly take issue with people who said today was a better day for batting.
Really?
Well, I'll only say this because it's a slightly contrary view, I accept. But I think yesterday, the ball did so much, it was actually hard to take wickets. There was a stat on TV that said the ball has moved more, I think, at this Headingley test than it's ever moved in a test match since records began, seeming-wise. That was sort of in the 2 days combined. Well, yesterday it moved so much it was impossible to get anybody out because people were just missing the ball by miles. I know there was that one ball to Travis Head, which was an absolutely peach from Stuart Broad, which you couldn't play, which just moved. But see, that only moved a fraction. It moved just enough to hit the off stump. Most of the deliveries that England bowled on the first day were moving so much, swinging, seaming, bouncing. They were missing the edge by miles, going over the top of the stumps. Nobody was ever going to nick those. Whereas today, the ball just moved enough, didn't it? It did a fair bit, but not too much. You only need to move the ball. A bat is 4 1/4 inches wide. So if you assume the middle of the bat is, say, 2 1/8 inches from one middle to the edge, you've only got to move the ball, say, 1 1/2 inches, say, and that's going to take the edge. And I thought that's what Australia did really well today. They managed to get that length, particularly Hazlewood, a little bit fuller maybe than certainly the Wokes and Stokes and even maybe Archer bowled in the first day. And they just managed to coax edges out of England. But having said that, if you look at the 8 wickets that fell, sorry, if you look at the 10 wickets that fell, I'd say only 2 at the most were actually bowled out. All the others were just hapless shots, poor shot selection, loose drives. And one thing, I mean, I didn't really hear Jeffrey on the radio today, but he's had that old adage, don't drive at Headingley in the mornings. Just don't drive the ball unless it's an absolute, you know, racing half volley right under your nose. And how many people were out driving this morning, England, driving balls which weren't quite half volleys? I don't know what the problem is, but it was absolutely woeful.
Yeah, I mean, well, hugely disappointing day, as we've said, you know, an Ashes defining day today. I take your point about the ball moving a lot yesterday. I mean, Warner was missing balls early on in his innings on the first day, and he was missing them by a long way. The ball was doing an incredible amount. But what I thought Australia did well is, you mentioned it, you touched on it there as well, they bowled a tighter line and a slightly fuller length, and that was the benefit for them. And what they did, I thought, was that they didn't give England anything either. You talked about that, you know, the Wokes and Stokes bowling yesterday, 2 for 96 in 21 overs when they were bowling, and then England tidied it up and tightened it up a bit later on. It took 8 wickets for 43. Australia gave England absolutely nothing. So if you put the highlights tape together, it looks like, you know, just those individual wickets, just put the wickets together, it looks like, you know, a whole series of terrible shots. But I think what they did really well is that they dried England up completely, and then there was the teasing ball, and England succumbed to it. Denley did, for example. Stokes did. I mean, the Stokes dismissal was, like, you know, really disappointing when you consider how well he'd played at Lords. You know, a magnificent innings from him there. And then it was such a wide delivery to get out like that, and he had a swish at the air. And it was that sort of day for England. But I think there wasn't much on offer for England. If you look at it, 24 overs before lunch, 54 runs only. You know, and, you know, this is a naturally aggressive England side. Australia, I thought, bowled really well. Actually, what you have to look at is you have to look at the whole session, not just the wickets. The wickets are bad, I agree. They are a bit ex-certificate. But look at the build-up to them as well. And I think sometimes, you know, if you see a highlights package, it doesn't always tell you... Well, it doesn't tell you the full story because it's a highlights package. But what I mean is you miss out on the context, on the reason why the wicket fell.
Yeah, I of course that's true. But, you know, surely the batsmen are experienced enough in most cases to recognise how a bowler's trying to get them out and just be patient. It just gets
totally
easier.
Totally, I agree.
If you
bat
for 30, 40 overs, or in case of Labuschagne, he's batted even longer he's batted now for 268 balls in the match, only being dismissed once. And yeah, he's just
I totally agree with you in that sense. All I'm saying is that Australia pressurised England into those mistakes and England fell into the trap. I totally agree with you on that. As for Labuschagne, actually, he's in his fourth innings already, because he's been dropped twice and he was caught off a no ball. And Stokes, it was a no ball, Stokes just over the line. So, he's had a massive slice of luck today, but, fair play to him. He's really rode his luck. He's been brilliant. What a replacement for Steve Smith, Marnus Labuschagne has been.
Yes, absolutely amazing. And he plays, actually, quite a similar style of game. Not quite as eccentric, but he looks to try and get across to off stump and cover the off stump and cover that corridor of uncertainty area better than really a lot of England batsmen. You look at Jason Roy, you look at even Joe Root, Joe Denley, they're all guys who like to stand more on middle and leg. Joss Butler's another one. They like to stand on middle and leg and go for the ball through the offside. And, I don't think it's working for England. And obviously there's a lot of debate at the moment about the best place for Joe Root to bat. He's got to bat better, for sure. That's one thing. I mean, he's had a couple of good balls. But, if you're a good batsman, you've got to survive good balls. And I thought today, actually, it wasn't that good a ball. I think a lot of other batsmen probably would have survived that, or they might have got a thick edge or something. It was a good ball, but not unplayable. But in the sort of form he's in at the moment and exposed to the new ball as he keeps being, it's tough on him, isn't it? And it was interesting, actually, listening to the debate on radio about where he should bat, because Alistair Cook was adamant he's got to bat at three, and Michael Vaughan and others were adamant he's got to bat at four. So you can see the dilemma. But, taking Root aside, there's just no, if I was a bowler, if I'm Josh Hazlewood or Pat Cummins, I'm just thinking, well, if I hang out outside off stump long enough, these guys are going to go after it and they're going to nick one. And they bowled exactly to that plan, and England just sort of fell into the trap like lemmings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, hugely disappointing day. One other factor in today's play, I think it's worth noting as well, it's something I've never seen before. I don't think I've ever seen before. David Warner at first slip, four catches before lunch. If you watch them in slow motion and knowing the wickets fall, you don't get the full sense of how well he caught. But watching it live, They were really sharp slip catches, some, not all of them, but he caught brilliantly. And what Australia did was they supported their bowlers, and England didn't do that. Johnny Bairstow dropped a catch. Joe Root dropped a catch. And, you wonder, you could speculate about Root standing there at slip, as a captain, all sorts of things going through your mind. But Labuschagne's nick, in slow motion it looks absolutely terrible, but it was a bit of a looper, and it was one of those that, as a slip fielder, you really have got to catch. And I'm not saying it would have changed the course of the day, not by any means, because Australia, with that 100-run lead on this pitch, were well in control of the game, and they've nailed down that advantage. Not totally, but, pretty much, you'd think. I mean, for England to win from here, it's going to need something spectacular. They've done it before here at Headingley. Of course, Mark Butcher played that fantastic innings on the final
they
day on a pitch.
What, about 370 or something?
No, a bit less than that. It was about around about the 320 mark. It was a tempting declaration set by Adam Gilchrist. But, Butch played out of his, one of the great innings on the final day. 170 on the final day of a test match. Mm. Sensational innings. So, it has been done before. And it's only going to be a third day pitch when England come round to trying to pursue the victory target. But you just wonder whether there's a collective confidence and there's still going to be enough in the pitch, and Lyon is going to cause one or two problems. So it just looks beyond England. Of course, they might produce something absolutely spectacular and dramatic. It doesn't look like it. The other thing I would say is about some of Australia's batting, when they batted for a second time, was not particularly flush either. I mean, England do not have the monopoly on poor batting. Marcus Harris, first ball to Leach, big drive. Leach bowling into the rough through the gate. I mean, I thought that was an appalling shot. Khawaja, big drive as well, nicked a slip, doing what some of the England players had been doing. So, there was some poor batting on offer as well from Australia, but you know, when you have that security of that lead, that big lead, just gives you a bit of confidence. Of course, there was a county game the other day where actually the lead was identical, 112 on first innings, that Kent versus Essex match, and then Kent were all out for 40 in their second innings, and Essex went on to win the game. So it is possible, but you just don't feel it's going to happen here. But the batting has not been good. Decent quality bowling, definitely from both sides, and a pitch that's just offered enough to the pace bowler, so it all adds up to a tough time for the batsman, relatively low scoring game, and a team with a 100-run lead, as you well know, in first innings, wins more often, many more times than not.
Such a shame to see a lack of any kind of application from batsmen. Obviously, Labuschagne accepted. It's a disease which is infecting the game all over the world, really. And you count on the fingers of one hand batsmen who are prepared to really stick it out. Pujara would obviously be a good example for India. But there are very few batsmen who are really prepared to bat like that, just bat all day and stick it out and accumulate runs, as obviously Alistair Cook did for years. It's becoming very much almost two kind of sports cricket, isn't it? The white ball game and the red ball game. And I was looking at the red ball today. I've got a couple of balls at home. I was looking at the red ball and the seam on it, and it does make a massive difference. If you get these pitches which are quite dry and with a bit of dry grass on top and quite coarse grass, these seams, they really grip, and the ball keeps its shine for a long time as well. It does make a batsman's life very difficult, but batsmen are just not prepared to stick it out and just work runs off thick edges and soft hands and all that. They just want to go hard at the ball, as if, in a way, they don't enjoy the art of application and nurdling and nudging and thick edging runs. They only enjoy, and this is something that Rahul Dravid said last year, the young batsman in India that he's coaching, they only enjoy whacking it for four, and they don't enjoy, he said he wanted to try and inject in the Indian batsman, young batsman, the satisfaction of a good leave, for instance. But I mean, that's becoming almost redundant, apart from the odd guy like Labuschagne, who I suppose has picked up how to bat in England by his stint with Glamorgan, where he scored over 1,000 runs and prepared superbly. And he's been, in a way, the difference between the two teams in this game.
Yeah, and it comes back to my point, I think, I was making on an earlier podcast about, do we just accept that batsmanship in Test cricket has changed, that the game moves on quickly, that players are brought up playing shots, and that, that stodgy technical player like Jeffrey in the past, Jeffrey Boycott, is sort of going out of the game, and that and they are the outliers now, really. They're the rarities.
And look at what's happened today, the announcement that Hazib Hamid has lost his contract with Lancashire. I mean, I think that might be a personality thing as much as it is an ability thing, but he's not made any runs for a couple of years. And, he plays in that sort of style. You called him Baby Boycott, didn't you? Or someone did.
Well, he was called Baby Boycott.
Himself,
yeah.
I don't know.
No, he was called Baby Boycott, when he came into the England side. I remember him hitting a six in Raj Kot early in the series. He played really well. He played magnificent innings in Mohali. I think that's a different issue. I mean, he had that finger injury, and he struggled to score runs, and it's not working out in Lancashire, so he's going to move on. I understand that he might be moving to another county, and hopefully he can revive his career. I mean, challenge was he's very good against the spinners, played really well in India, but how does he cope with the pace bowlers as well?
He is
someone who looked prepared to dig in, but his career has gone, is down in the cul-de-sac at the moment. It's a question whether he can reverse out and get back on the main road.
So we've got a story today where England's highest score was Joe Denley with 12, and it's the lowest highest score by an England batsman I think ever in an innings. England's second lowest score against Australia since 1909, the lowest since 1948. And any chance of a monsoon ruining the game, saving England?
Absolutely not. It's a lovely evening, Headingley. I think it's going to get even hotter. I mean, other things that happened today as well, wickets off no balls, drop catches, Jofra Archer going off injured. And I think everyone held their breath when he went off It's difficult to tell what it was. He came back on, so we assume it was just cramp. But for a moment, he thought, hamstring injury. Having said that, it's weird, isn't it? When the Ashes is such a big thing for England and Australia, that when it looks to have gone, everything just feels pointless after that. Oh, well, OK, you've got to play these remaining two games, and there's a World Test Championship, of course. But, you know, Archer's fitness, you know, if England are 2-0 down, it's important to him, and, you know, going forward, it's not quite so crucial anymore if they are going to be 2-0 down going to Old Trafford with Australia retaining the Ashes. I mean, that is how significant, you know, winning the Ashes or not seems to be. It is the gold standard for both these sides, you know, in the Red Bull game, and suddenly that's why it's such a deflating day for England, such an uplifting day for Australia.
Yeah, I wonder if going forwards, one of the key things will be, because of the importance of these Ashes test matches to both countries, maybe they should look at not having back-to-back tests, because, you know, the fallout from it, the injuries and the fatigue, cramp, mental fatigue as well, does take its toll. And you're not, you know, when you play, I mean, they had a hard game at Lords and then 3 days off and then straight into this Headingley test match. It seems a bit, although they lost time at Lords, you know, they had a lot of time in the field towards the end of that test match. It just feels like there's not a proper build-up to each test, and they need time, these players, to recover, and maybe players to get back into form that haven't, you know, featured in the series so far, or, you know, challenge for places or whatever with a match against the counties in between. I think they should make more of an Ashes tour generally, rather than cramming it all in 6 weeks. It should be more of a celebration of the game, with Australia going around the country playing the county sides and giving some of the younger county players the chance to play against. I mean, I remember it was one of the highlights of my career when I played against Australia for Middlesex. You know, you look forward to them coming to Lords, and they got David Boone and Kim Hughes. In fact, it's one of my most humiliating moments was batting against the Australians. I think they had Craig McDermott and Jeff Lawson, and Jeff Lawson bounced me, and I hooked it for four. I hooked Jeff Lawson for four against Australia, but unfortunately, I followed through with my bat and whacked the stumps down. And Steve Waugh and Alan Ball are just absolutely creased up laughing, and I had to walk off with my stumps flat on the ground. But it was a highlight of my career, and it'd be a highlight of lots of county players' careers, and it'd be the same for state sides in Australia, you know, provincial sides, if they play against the England team on tour. But the way they sort of just wedge it all in now, it seems it's damaging the players and damaging the brand of the Ashes, isn't it?
Well, it's damaging the brand of the Ashes, I'm not so sure. Cause, I mean, it's still a spectacle, and, you know, it was dramatic yesterday, it was dramatic today, it was dramatic at Lords when Jofra Archer was bowling to Steve Smith. I take your point about cramming it in, and this summer feels more crammed than ever before. And we were supposed to get away from Ashes, then World Cups. We've talked about this before. And, you know, England changed their schedule to get rid of that, and then suddenly 2019, here we go, World Cup and Ashes. You know, the Ashes actually following the World Cup, and I think it's definitely affected England. A lot of their World Cup players are in this Ashes side. I think it's definitely had an effect. They haven't been able to prepare as they would want for an Ashes series, all that Red Bull practice. I think it's obvious that that's the case. And, you know, I think the World Cup was a priority. We're all enjoying the Ashes. We're all captivated by it. But I think there are, you know, structural problems that have undermined England perhaps more. Having said that, you know, this is a decent Australian, very good Australian bowling attack. They pressurised England, and today they've got their rewards. I was saying at the start of this podcast, you know, it's not a surprise in a way that England have collapsed and you know, not been able to get up to 100 even today, because it's happened so often recently. Their batting has been so fallible, and just put under pressure, you know, it has not been able to cope with that pressure, and it's a massive opportunity lost, huge opportunity lost. Just coming to the ground this morning, you just knew this was the day, this was England's opportunity, and it looks to have gone.
Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there with the only uplifting note that Ben Stokes managed to bowl 15.2 overs virtually off the reel and was still
bowling brilliantly,
88 miles an hour towards the end of the game. I mean, amazing energy he has. Whatever he has for breakfast and lunch, I want some, because he seems to have sort of eternal energy So great day for him, apart from his batting. But everything else is just something you want to draw a line under and forget about almost for England. Tomorrow, well, what can they do?
Well, they've got to bowl Australia out first, as cheaply as possible, and then somehow try to piece together some self-respect, I think, when they bat. You know, not be bundled out for 120, you know, to at least, if they can, play with some discipline and fight. But it's going to be such a tall order. You just feel with this Australian bowling lineup on this surface that sooner or later there's going to be a good enough ball to get you out. And if there's not a good enough ball to get you out, there might be a misjudgment because of the pressure that England are playing under and perhaps the lack of confidence and the overall lack of preparation. I totally agree with what you said about Ben Stokes. A magnificent spell because Archer was not bowling and he took it upon himself. He was roaring in from the football stand there, and it was a fantastic spell, but he was almost like he was trying to fight a tornado really on his own because you know he was under so much pressure to get England back in the game. It was almost impossible, but he gave it a go and picked up some wickets towards the end of the day's play, but a lost cause, you'd think.
Well, I think on that rather gloomy note, we should bid everyone adieu and go and drown your sorrows, because sometime in the next couple of days, England are going to be handing over the ashes and we'll have a proper post-mortem after that.
Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.